Hello and welcome to the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists news podcast for April. I just wanted to take this chance to say that the RCSL2 podcasts have now had over 10,000 downloads, and I was amazed to find out that we've been heard in all continents except Antarctica. So I'd like to say a big thanks to all our listeners, both the new and the ones who've been joining us for a while, and also a big thank you to all those who've been giving their time to be interviewed. And without further ado, I'm now going to head over to say hello to Derek Munn, who is RCSL2's Director of Policy and Public Affairs, for our monthly chat. Hello, Derek.
Good morning, Vicky. Good
morning. I think we've probably got quite a lot to cover today. Firstly, I'd like to go to the RCSL2 survey. So the last time we chatted, you mentioned the recent survey looking at access to speech and language therapy during the pandemic and said that it would be out soon. I'm pleased to say it's now out, and I wonder what you can tell us about it, please.
Okay, so we went with the title Build Back Better SLT, which is using the government language, because the point is to make the case that speech and language is important to what we all need to do after the pandemic. 500 responses in the end. We were absolutely delighted that adults with experience in speech and language therapy, parents, young people, people using the accessible formats to tell their stories, for example, around aphasia. So we were very pleased. And as you would expect, people had good things to say about the speech and language therapy that they received. But in many cases, particularly during the periods of lockdown, people reported that there was little or no speech and language therapy. That's to be understood, and it's what lessons we learn going forward, I guess. Telehealth, of course. Telehealth, again, as you would expect, it's a mixed picture. There are people, there are households for whom telehealth works. And there are others, either because of the household setup or the digital or the condition or the individual preference, where it just doesn't. And telehealth is a mixed picture, I guess, is what comes from that. What was consistent, though, was people talking about the communication they received from the speech and language therapist or from the team or from the department. And I guess people understood that things weren't going to be like they normally would be, but what people found difficult was feeling that they just weren't being contacted, they just weren't being communicated with, and that came through strongly. There was something I would mention which is ongoing, and that is we were able to correlate the data with postcode and deprivation. And it was perhaps not surprising, but nonetheless concerning, that the more deprived the postcode, the less SLT was being offered, either in person or remotely. And that's something for us all to reflect upon. So what do we do with it going forward? Well, abstracting out of what people have said, because the RCSLT is about to develop its new 5-year vision. And the starting point clearly is going to be the views of service users and their experiences. And the asks we made off the back of our survey are around levelling up provision. Again, government terminology, that phrase levelling up, and removing inequality. I think it's the inequity which comes through particularly strongly. Now, I've talked before about the fact that every influencing organisation, every lobby, every cause says, look, what we do is really exceptional, and here's why. We obviously make the case that language, and children's language in particular, are foundational. As with the Birkow 10 report, in just really a 3-day period, 82 national organisations, 82 organisations from the fields of health, education, justice, across the piece, serious big organisations, agreed to co-sign a letter to the Prime Minister about the foundational nature of language. So I think the reminder to ourselves there is, when we say that language underlies everything, when we say it's the underpinning and you can't do other stuff without it, everybody else agrees. We're not making this up. Yeah. That should strengthen us in our influence in going forward.
That's really interesting. Thank you, Derek. And amazing that you had so much engagement with the other organisations. I wonder, where do you go next with this piece of work?
Partly mining down into the data. So we're beginning to publish sub-reports geographically. The first one will be Scotland, And by condition, first one would be on Parkinson's, because we've engaged very closely with Parkinson's as an organisation throughout this. There's likely shortly to be a parliamentary petition to sign, so please watch out for that on social media, because when the parliamentary petition goes live, really important that as many members as possible sign that. And obviously the findings are now being used and played in to all of the ministerial and other influencing meetings. We've already presented it to MPs and Lords in Parliament, and it'll be an underpinning of all our influencing going forward.
Great, thank you. And where will people be able to find this petition?
It will be on the Parliament website, but we'll be tweeting the links by every known means.
Brilliant, thank you. Okay, that's a lot to think about and a lot of work going forward. I wonder if you can now sort of give listeners an update on what's happening around COVID at the moment, please.
Yeah, focusing on my kind of public affairs side, so I won't be able to cover off all of the professional and clinical stuff. But you know, people listening to this will be aware themselves. There's an extent to which business as usual is coming back, and COVID-19 is becoming just the way things are. But then there's still specific stuff around the disease. You'll have seen the news this week in both Northern Ireland and England about waiting lists and times. And as other services return, long waiting lists and continued pressure is there. So health and well-being remains a major concern. And we know members, particularly in certain contexts, you know, the pressures upon you remain extreme. We get that. We continue to engage in long COVID in all its aspects, making sure that we're making the right input in the right places. The latest version of the NICE guidance on long COVID leaves something to be desired from our point of view in respect of speech, language, communication and swallowing. So we'll need to intervene on that to try and get the NICE guidance into a state that is more like we would wish. We've got a meeting coming up with the Children's Minister in England. I'll be meeting them alongside colleagues from OT and physio. We will talk about immediate issues like access to schools for professionals and appropriate protection, but we'll also be talking about longer term issues around capacity and commissioning that link to some of the changes to the NHS in England, actually, which I may come on to later in this conversation. The Women and Equalities Committee in Parliament have published their report on equalities aspects of COVID-19. We were pleased to see that they recognised the importance of clear masks, transparent face coverings, and that they specifically mentioned the relevance of that in respect of speech and language therapy and dementia and autism alongside deafness. Progress is incredibly slow on getting clear masks commissioned and trying to say, look, this is an aspect of equality for people. It's not a nice to have. So we keep prodding the system on that. And more ground is being made on ventilation. So I mentioned last month that there'd been a change to the wording of government guidance. You've seen the Prime Minister now talking about hands, face, space, fresh air. So again, very slowly, things are moving towards our understanding of viral transmission and the need for ventilation. And you know, there was an editorial in the BMJ this week, and you know, starting to hopefully we've got further meetings forthcoming to try and push that case.
Wonderful, thank you, Derek. Going on to something completely different now. On May the 6th, voters in Wales and Scotland will go to the polls for elections for the Cymru and Scottish Parliament, respectively. What has RCSLT been doing to influence, and how are the election campaigns going?
Well, in Scotland, there's no doubt that the constitutional issue is dominant, as it often is. And clearly, the RCSLT takes no position. Members in Scotland will have passionate views on both sides of that debate, but were there to be a majority for a further referendum, that will have implications for the whole of the UK and every organisation and will be a big part of our lives in the years ahead, if that comes about. But actually, the SNP focused its launch yesterday on health spending, talked about a guarantee of 2.5 billion extra, talked about a 25% increase in mental health spending. So clear that the SNP's front and centre offer is about funding for health. Of course, opposition parties in Scotland have said, you've been in power for 14 years, what have you been doing? Which is always the way of these things. We had particularly been talking to the SNP about inclusive communication and about appropriate legal recognition for inclusive communication. Very pleased to see a specific commitment in the SNP manifesto about public sector equality duty and about guidance to ensure that inclusive communication is there. We've made the case to them that you know, you're better to do it in legislation. We'll continue to push that, but the manifesto commitment is really strong. Last week, a couple of the Welsh ones. So Welsh Labour committed itself to more health staff in Wales. Plaid Cymru actually named 1,000 additional allied health professionals and used the term. So that was pleasing to see.
Thank you. And final question, really, for this month. What else do you think listeners will be keen to hear about?
Well, there's things that people are keen to hear about and things that people maybe ought to know about, and they may not be the same thing. For example, NHS reform in England is getting bigger in our daily lives and our workloads. The white paper on reform, which we're broadly supportive of, is not being consulted on unusually. It's just been put out there as a face of conflict. I think because there's already been an NHS England paper that underlies a lot of it. But when it gets to Parliament, there'll be lots of things that we need to talk about and check. The two proposed bodies in each local area for the integrated care system, one NHS and one wider, how those work together, particularly for speech and language therapy, which is outside the NHS. The position of children in the new structures, which is going to be essential. There's already a role around primary care. There's already a role around workforce. So we need to inform members at all levels around all of this. We also need to support particularly leaders locally as they engage with this and share best practice. And there's a whole new lexicon now of people boards, AHP councils, AHP faculties, the latest set of things that we need to learn and engage with.
Good to know. Anything else?
I suppose a couple more things just to say, apprenticeships hasn't gone away. And a lot of appetite. We're organising a webinar shortly around apprenticeships. Hundreds of people have signed up for this webinar. So the stage we're at now is trying to help the market form in the sense of providers, you know, trusts and other healthcare providers need to say, okay, we need apprentices. Universities need to say, okay, we want to offer apprenticeship routes. And we need to bring those together probably at a regional level. But we are continuing to make progress towards the day when that happens. The very last thing to finish on a good note, those of you who've listened to these podcasts will have heard me talk about the domestic abuse bill and the work we've been doing in Parliament to try and ensure that speech language communication is appropriately recognised within the work of the field of domestic abuse. In the House of Lords final debate, the Minister got up and said on the record that she had heard what the messages around speech and language therapy and that they would be ensuring that speech, language and communication was in the guidance to the bill, which was exactly what we were looking for. So huge thanks to our parliamentary supporters for making that happen.
A brilliant way to end. Well, thank you, Derek, and we'll meet again next month.